Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you guys doing on the regular chat? You know, I made a joke about Taylor Swift a couple of months ago, and now there's a Pan-African American Studies professor in California that is basically going with the exact same thing I did as a joke. She goes with the theory. She proposes the theory that Taylor Swift is a kind of implicit survival of racism in America because she displays such whiteness. And I had said that her teaming up with Travis Kelce from this football team was kind of total Aryan victory in the same line. At this point, I've listened to so much leftism that I can model their mind, and I can expect what they will say and what they will think of a situation, and they feel that Taylor Swift is too white. Elon Musk blasts Google's insane anti-civilizational programming. Elon Musk blasted Google's insane racist anti-civilizational programming as the fallout over the Gemini AI controversy continued to rumble. You know, Google AI generating this as an illustration of British history or Irish history or whatever, incapable of drawing white people on request, always trying to replace white people in images by black people to misrepresent the past. And it's the conclusion of what has already been the case. I mean, this we had seen it in the Google search images already. So it's already been the case that leftism and anti-whiteness has penetrated big tech. And the only big tech that is trying to get away from this, maybe you could say Grok, but even Grok is not at the point of generating images, but it's kind of trying to present a centrist view, at least, of America. And Gab is the only fair representation, really, where you can, you know, these AIs are capable of making you chat with Hitler. They are just programmed not to do it. So it's very easy for Gab, with less resources, to come in and say, no, we're just going to unleash the AI that you've created, all of your open source software. We're going to take it and we're going to make it do everything that it can do. That is normally how competition works in the market. And hopefully, I don't know if the AI trend will last forever. I think people may be tired of it if it's just conversational, if it doesn't really help you do something more efficiently in society. It might be put on the side. If it cannot become a replacement for your employees, it will be put on the side. But if it can replace employees in terms of writing perhaps code or perhaps journalistic text, then you can expect a couple of newspapers to switch to the AI model eventually. Like Vice, it's firing all of its leftists. Man, the story of Vice is a sad thing. The story of Vice, there was a time at which I was leftist enough and Vice was right-wing enough for me to kind of enjoy their quirkiness and their, oh, we're going to do something special here that will put people uncomfortable, but we're going to look for the truth in this. There was a time at which America was not so polarized that I could enjoy Vice, because Vice was produced by a bunch of punk leftists, you know, the Tim Pool type, the Gavin McInnes type, and they were doing very exclusive documentaries, the kind that you wouldn't see anywhere else. Like the documentary they did about the bride kidnapping in Kazakhstan is absolutely stunning. There's a true tradition where if you marry a wife in Kazakhstan, you need to kidnap her and you need to enclose her in a room, and your grandma will offer her candy until she submits and accepts to be kidnapped by you and be your wife going forward. I love it. And you know, it was the kind of thing that Vice could do that no other media would do. The leftists would be still a little too offended. The right-wingers wouldn't care about Kazakhstan. And so you had a unique opportunity to get an anthropological look at something. But eventually, Vice replaced most of its workforce, kicked out the people who were early associated with it. Basically, Tim Pool, I believe, had a whole story that he told on a stream or on a video where he basically had a choice to do, to continue there, to go with wokeness, the new wokeness that was installing itself, or to go on his own, and he decided to go on his own. He denied himself much money in doing so, but he ended up making much more money as an independent creator. But I don't know if it was with Vice or if it was with Disney or something. It was one of these conglomerates. But anyway, Vice had this switch from a very open-minded leftism to a very woke one. And it took about 5 years before they totally crashed from $5.7 billion to basically nothing. Today, Vice is announcing, well, today, yesterday, Vice has announced that they will not have writing anymore. So I don't know what it means. They will have the domain name. They might have some assets, but basically, it won't be an outlet anymore. It's not going to be available to people. And I don't know where it goes from there. Liquidation, they're going to sell. But in any case, it's not going to be a journalistic place anymore. People are enjoying the demise of Vice Media, with many of them pointing out that literally nothing of value was lost. Having once been valued at $5.7 billion in 2017 and acquired out of bankruptcy last year by a consortium including George Soros, the company announced plans to cut hundreds of jobs and as of 14 hours ago, stopped publishing on Vice.com. and they were noting, like, the last article that they published is people are looking at the last few articles on there and laughing their ass off at what Vice had become. How to have sex with a fat girl. Touch, and I cannot stress this enough, the FUPA. Oh, what the fuck is this? Elon memes as Twitter burns. You know, Vice declaring the death of Twitter. It's so funny that an organism that was in the process of dying itself was seeing death in X, where X has rose above everything. Vice CEO Bruce Dixon says that the company will lay off hundreds of employees and stop publishing on the Vice.com website. We navigate the ever-evolving business landscape. We need to adapt and best align our strategies. Okay, so they might continue producing content for YouTube, but they won't have their own model and their own outlet. So when you lose this, you lose a lot of control on what you do, because your domain name is the place where you can always fall back. Now, when you start to depend on other companies, like I depend on Odyssey, if Odyssey goes wrong, if I get banned from some of the sub providers that allow us to function here with super chats and everything, you become extremely dependent. And a big thing like Vice cannot do like I could do, which is move instantly to another platform. They have employees. It takes time to move their collections, and so Vice will become much smaller. John Drake says they got grifted $500 million a few years back and then another $350 from Soros and still went broke. Well, that's the reality of these top-down media organizations. They are only useful to the extent that there's a billionaire willing to bleed. That's the difference between bottom-up media, which is what I do. I depend only on a bunch of ears being willing to listen to what I have to say. They don't really depend just on this. They depend on the ears, and then they depend on a billionaire who wants those ears. So it's they are more like a broker between two partners, where I'm not a broker. I'm merely, I deliver a service to people at the bottom, willing to pay some small super chats. But in their model, there can be two reasons why they go wrong. They can lose the audience, in which case the billionaire is not interested in bleeding anymore. Or they can lose the billionaire, because the billionaire has some other projects or thinks that some other outlets will be more efficient at reaching the societal changes that he's looking for. So that's the story of media. That's why most media companies like CNN, they survive on a top-down funding. They need constant advertising, overspending. The advertisers are pouring down money saying, okay, maybe we won't sell that many cars with this advertising, but at least we're flooding CNN with money and they will speak in the way we expect them to speak. That is the sad history of media. And I hope that one day this form of media is completely dead, because this media addresses a need at the top, which is the need to control public opinion. That's why the media sucks. You know, when you listen to CNN, that's why it sucks. It's not been designed for you. It's been designed with the hope that you would watch, because they do need the audience numbers, but it's been designed to change your mind in a certain direction. Dead Star says a couple billion for the work a kid on YouTube can do a million times better. Exactly. Because the kid is not constrained by, I need to adopt this position. I need to speak positively of this and negatively of that. And at some point, there is a tension. And I think that in the current competitive environment, we are set to completely destroy the top-down model eventually. Now, there's going to be billionaires willing to bleed for maybe 20, 30 years still. But eventually, they realize, hey, we're bleeding for nothing here. And they're going to start trying to buy influencers like me, and they're going to find a brick wall. They're going to find some of these TikTok stars that they can buy out, but it's going to be always a piecemeal buying of the big pie. This is the joke I had done about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. Had said the love story between Taylor Swift and this footballer is nothing else than total Aryan victory. It is a reminder to the ugly positive left that no matter how much they blur the line of sexual dimorphism and beauty, the white Stacy will always go for the white Chad footballer. And at this point, a professor of Pan-African studies has reached the same conclusion as me, that basically the whole fandom around Taylor Swift is a form of hidden racism. It's an Aryan thing. Professor says it feels slightly racist to be a Taylor Swift fan. California professor added, it's kind of like that feeling I get when there are too many American flags. A California professor who is no stranger to controversial opinions, Melina Abdullah, speculated that it might be racist to be a Taylor Swift fan. Why do I feel it's slightly racist to be a Taylor Swift fan? Abdullah, a professor of Pan-African Studies at Cal State University, Los Angeles, is a self-described Black Lives Matter organizer, Pan-Africanist, hip-hop scholar, daughter of God, womanist, truth teller, and mama. She is also listed as a co-founder of the Black Lives Matter Los Angeles chapter and co-director of the activist wing of the advocacy organization Black Lives Matter Grassroots. She responded to questions on her tweet saying, "Folks think they're attacking me by asking why I think everything is racist. I'm not offended. Virtually everything is racist." She wrote in another post addressing the attention. "Why do I feel like this was some right-wing white supremacist conspiracy? Boo. Hashtag Super Bowl." And she added, "Attention, white people, please don't ask if you can come to the cookout. Hashtag Juneteenth is Freedom Day for Black folks. It should be hashtag Reparations Day for white folks." Simeon says, "Truth teller, lol." DK Shadow says, "Taylor Swift is the racist honeypot the elites use to deliver their poison." Is that the theory on the left? You know, Taylor Swift, you look at her.
Culprit!
There she is, the white woman, the object of sexual desire, using her white privilege to freely walk in the park while being the center of attention for the paparazzis and everyone who wants to have a word with her. Here she has her slave drum player, I don't know how it's called, which she can pay for. I mean, it is very white. It is very white when you see Taylor Swift in the video performance where she's in the metro and she's just teasing everyone sexually in the metro. This is extremely white privilege. And it's a white view of the city also, rather than view the city as the kind of sewers that it has become, the human sewer that it has become. She presents an image of the city more like Sex in the City, more white woman type of liberated sexuality type of area. So yes, I agree that Taylor Swift is like, it's the secret way in which leftists can continue being racist without saying it. Taylor Swift has a body that is extremely white, extremely Eastern European almost. Like she looks like one of these Russian models of some kind, like kind of weirdly shaped face, but a thin body. And I think it's a reminder to the leftists that no matter how much they want to promote ugly, the standards of beauty are still there in their mind. That's why you have the elevation of someone like Taylor Swift. And her music is very white too. I was listening to very modern black music, and it's like boom, 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 bitch, bitch, boom, 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 boom. You know, female singing, and it's all bouncy, booty, juicy, bitch, bouncy, booty, booty. It's monosyllabic, just bum, bum, bum. Whereas there is still melody in the Taylor Swift music, just like in the 90s. There is still a white concern to have more than one monotonic beat in the song. Rodi Lucid says she's safe in New York because Spider-Man is there, Daredevil, the Avengers, Fantastic Four. The streets are safe. Suburban says, "I am unironically a Swift fan." HV said this for years. Who's HV? I don't know who that is. Charles Garrity says she represents a very beautiful white way of being, and this bothers leftists. Absolutely. Ukraine says that it shut down another large Russian spy plane Ukraine says it has shut down a large Russian spy plane over the Sea of Azov on Friday, and social media footage is widely circulated of the alleged downing. I don't know why it rhythmically explodes like this. All right, so the war continues, and at great cost. It seems that they were saying this is a high worth aircraft that was down something like $500 million in value, $300 million estimated value for the A-50 aircraft. Here we have a streaming brought to an extreme. This is, if I understand the situation, the streamer disguises himself in some weird female clothes and tries to attract pedophiles, catch them on his stream live, and punishes them by shaving them to shame them.
Come here. Hey, just talk to my phone.
So that would be the streamer who's... What the fuck is this clothing? If you have to go that degenerate to catch pedophiles, I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to do it personally.
Hey, bro, just make it easy. Just talk to him. How old are you?
Let's go, puppy. Why are you being a pedophile, bro?
Why are you being a pedophile, bro?
Let's go. I got a pedophile, and I told him he can go if I shave his head.
It's such a weird experience to see a high muscle man with tattoos dressed as a doll or whatever, shaving another man for being a pedo. John Drake says, is this legal? I don't think it is legal. I think you could get accused of false imprisonment. You cannot say to someone, I'm going to let you go if you let me shave your hair, because then you are threatening them to kidnap them. But sometimes, you know, there are illegal things that happen on stream that don't get prosecuted.
It's okay, Papa. Here, tell him. Here he goes back. He's lucky he's not going to jail. He should feel good about himself.
You want to have a threesome? So are you asking if you want to have a threesome?
Tell him. He asked me if you wanted to have a threesome. That's what he just said.
Anything. A threesome with a little boy? A 15-year-old?
No. See?
A threesome with a 15-year-old?
Look in the camera.
Come
here. Yes, I don't know if the pedo will go in prison. I don't know if you guys are suggesting you will. But with street justice like this, it all depends. Was the evidence gathered in line with the standards? There may very well be tricks that they've used that are not legal. And especially if they threatened him to shave his head, that would come in court. And okay, you're talking about the host. Yes, the host of the stream might very well go to jail. Because that is... either it's an organized thing, and perhaps this is all comedy. Perhaps it's an actor and not a real pedo. But if it's real that he threatened him of imprisonment to shave his head, that would be definitely a crime. Anyways, the streaming world is so wild. People are attempting all sorts of things until it veers inevitably. When I saw this whole IRL thing that Andy Warski was getting into, I knew that there was nothing good that could come out of it. And you've seen back in the days, Andy Warski was in those IRL streams for less than a week. And we had a gun fight at some point where someone pulled a gun. It's never good. Someone shot warning shots in the air, I think. It always goes bad. Dead Star says the streamer Vitaly is a criminal Russian immigrant. Yeah, he did sound Eastern in his accent. Oh yeah, stay back! That was what people were yelling with the gunshots, and someone got to jail for this. I remember, stay back! Stay back! Someone got to jail for pulling the gun out or shooting the gun. I don't remember. Rodericid says, Warski still doesn't have AIDS, but the day is not over yet. Yes, I feel that my AIDS bet on Andy Warski that he would get HIV within 7 years of 2018, I think I took this bet. I think it's aging well. I think that HIV is currently preparing itself to enter the body of Andy Warski. DK Shadow says, how do you know he doesn't have it? Well, exactly. So we won't know necessarily at the point in time that he has it. Maybe we'll learn about it years later when his immune system starts not working. I'm still confident that Andy Warski will have HIV at some point. Jordan B. Peterson, it's not clear what he's saying with Ibrahim Kendi. He says, if there is black culture, then there is white culture. And we've been on that fucking merry-go-round before, buddy. What is Jordan Peterson suggesting here? Because he could be suggesting, hey, if you're going to have a claim for black culture, we're going to have a claim for white culture. And so it could be very identitarian what Jordan is saying here. But I think it's not. I think he's saying, hey, shut up, black people. Don't claim black culture. Because the day you claim black culture, you will awaken a bunch of white people who will start realizing that there is such a thing as white culture. I think it may be in that sense that Jordan is saying, we've been on that fucking merry-go-round before. So he's saying, don't trigger the fascist. Don't trigger the white identitarian. Shut up about the uniqueness of black culture. Because the more you insist on it, the more whites will realize that they're not part of it. And then they will have to fall in another category, and inevitably, it will be white racial consciousness. That was in response to a tweet by Ibrahim Kendi that was saying, so you think black culture is inferior to white culture because the instincts of black people are inferior and biologically distinct from white people, a distinction derived from evolution, and you think I am an incompetent pet of upper class white people? I must say it has been years since I came across these kinds of ideas. Not the second part, the first, but if I am remembering correctly from my research, there was a small group of social Darwinists in the early 20th century who imagined the biological racial hierarchy of instincts while also animalizing black people as needing to function as the pets of white people. But they were unable to get many people to believe their racist ideas. Other racist ideas were more effective in manipulating people. That's what typically the race-denying leftists do. They bring back to a historical claim. It's like, oh, well, in 1910, some scientists claimed this. So what do you have to say about this? Well, I don't care. In 1910, pretty much every scientist was wrong on most things. You know? we can look at it from the perspective of modern acquired data, and we can say for sure that there are behavioral differences between black people and white people. When we look as to what underlies these behaviors, we systematically find a genetic component. So we observed on the one hand that the races differ in behavior. When we ask within one of these races, what's the cause of having a more violent white person or a less violent white person or a more psychiatrically disordered person? And the answer is always genes. The answer is always genes. There is not a single cognitive human behavior that is not massively influenced by genes as assessed by twin studies. So Ibram Kendi was answering this whataboutism of the past in answer to Brian Muldoon, who was saying, of course, there is such a thing as black culture. Denial like this, just a disparate attempt to avoid answering the question. You don't get it. You're not fooling anyone. White people think you're retarded from slavery and feel sorry for you. They think you got bumped on the head during slavery and now you're all confused. This is why they don't complain when you say stupid things. They don't think you can do any better. Oh, that is the bigotry of low expectation that he's describing here. But a lot of white liberals are like this. They think, oh my God, we need to give them a chance. So let's abolish meritocracy for them. But they don't realize. If you abolish meritocracy for black people, you are imprisoning them into a dead end. Because the striving for success in a meritocracy is the only thing that will improve a race. It's the only reason why white people became what they are. It is challenge and solutions and rewarding of the good solutions and punishing of the bad solutions. If you just say, oh, we're going to give a free pass to the Western meritocracy to all black people, then you are trapping them into a system where they can't improve because they get the reward whether they get the higher salary, whether they're good or not. White people would have become a brutal society if it hadn't been that the brutes were punished and the intelligent people were rewarded, were not rewarded. So if you build a society in which the brutes are equally rewarded to the intelligent people, the brutes win. DK Shadow says, teach a man to fish versus give them a fish. Exactly. The key to this has always been known by humanity. Muldoon was continuing, black culture is less successful and everyone knows it. Human instinct evolve in a world where all wealth comes from nature. To succeed in the modern world where wealth comes from human labor, you have to make counter-instinctive cultural progress. And no one has done less of that than blacks. And Ibram Kendi was saying, there is no such thing as black culture. Ethnic groups have cultures, not races. But you seem to think of black culture as the inferior, as dysfunctional, as the problem, not racism. Is my assessment of your views accurate? Well, so it seems that Jordan is not so much answering to Ibram Kendi. Because Ibram Kendi here has just been denying that there was such a thing as black culture. So either Jordan Peterson has not read the full thread or he's really answering more to Muldoon than Ibram Kendi. Because Jordan sides with Ibram Kendi in terms of denying black culture. When he says, anyways, we shouldn't talk about black culture because if there's a black culture, then there will be a white culture and then we're in trouble. But this trouble is exactly what we've been trying to push since 2016. Because it's trouble that must be faced by civilization. There is such a thing as white culture. Because wherever there are white people in America and suddenly they're gone, and they're replaced by black people, you see a radical change in behavior, expectations, following of criminal law, rates of crime, value of homes. So there is definitely something. There is some reason why people want to live beside white people. Shamrock Shake says meritocracy has been dead for quite some time in Canada. Of course, Canada is a zombie economy. I've been charmed by a lot of the Trump promises that he's starting to make. We can feel that Trump is back, like in 2016, he's back in his electoral mode. But it's always scary to me because I know that Trump makes a lot of promises. He doesn't keep them all. I don't think that it can be said that Trump drained the swamp. I don't think he drained the swamp. The proof of it is he's being attacked by the swamp still as of today. So the swamp wasn't drained properly. So we have to be careful where we interpret Trump's promises, because the fact is he delivers on less than half of them. And also, the promises that he does give are kind of incomplete and half-assed. Look at this. Trump says he will create an anti-Christian bias task force. I'm super enthusiastic about this. But we all know what should happen. There should be an anti-white bias task force. We all know it. It's on the lips of everyone. And yet Trump cannot incarnate this desire of the new generation to say, hey, it's not just anti-Christian bias. You should look into anti-white bias. White people are becoming the most hated, the most targeted minority in America.
It's a fascist government. The Biden administration wants to do major harm to you. You cannot let people vote for these people. You cannot let people vote for the Democrats. They're really wanting to change.
So he's talking to the Association of Christian Communicators.
Our whole system of values. Upon taking office, I will create a new federal task force on fighting anti-Christian bias. It's become a very big term, anti-Christian bias. Not believable that you have a term like that, is it? When you think about it, it's like, where did that come from? And it's a very recent phenomenon. Its mission will be...
It's not so recent. It's really paralleled with the overtake of American institutions by Jewry. And it's been going on since probably the 70s. Since probably the 70s, at least, we have a bunch of agents who are going into the government. They are kind of secularists, descendants of Jews, technocrats. They come from the academic world, and they have a serious issue with Christianity. They just hate Christianity, and they resent it probably for being demographically successful. And so they get into these technocratic positions and they impose arbitrary suffering on Christian families. They attempt to destroy them through various trickeries. And they also push messages that are anti-Christian and anti-white through public schools. They try to chop the dicks of Christian sons. They try to chop the boobs of Christian daughters. They try to promote LGBT lifestyles so they don't reproduce. The problem here is, okay, I want this task force, Trump, but you haven't proven to me in this speech that you understand the full issue. There is a war for reproduction in America, and there are a bunch of people who hate Christians so much and white people so much, they're willing to coordinate the whole of the American government, from immigration to social welfare to the way we process things in family courts to the way we educate children in public school, all of it targeted at reducing the reproduction of the majority of the U.S. still, which is white Christians. If you can't say that in clear words, I'm not sure your task force will be able to do anything about it. Miko says, JF looks tired. I am tired. I've been working a lot and my sleep has been disrupted. So hopefully you can accept that today I speak a little more slower. My eyes are a little more down. But look, I deliver, even when I take breaks like I did this week, I still deliver 5 shows a week. I do my best, but you're not going to get a full energy JF every day. And that's okay. You know, it's life. I'm super happy to be tired, honestly, because I'm being used at my maximum by nature. I'm delivering everything that a biological organism is expected to deliver. I'm spending time with family, investing time in education and family, and work and making money. So, yeah, I'm tired, but you'd rather have a news agent who brings you the news tired than a news agent who's full energy but lying to you. So I think it's part of the human thing that we do here. I'm just a human delivering the news, and accept me as I am. Personally, I take no issue with this. I hope it doesn't bother you guys. And if it bothers you, well, just watch the shows where I'm high energy.
To investigate all forms of illegal discrimination, harassment, and persecution against Christians in America. As president, I will once again appoint rock-solid conservative judges in the mold of Justices Antonin Scalia and the great Clarence Thomas, who's doing a phenomenal job.
That's all good, but we still have the penetration of the intelligence agencies. We still have the penetration of the educational system. And we still have the state problem, which is that no matter if you were to neutralize the entirety of the federal government, it's only going to leave the states to be the determinant of who is infiltrating which institution. So yes, it's part of the job, but you know, the left is working hard to take all institutions at all levels in ways that you might not even be able to control at the federal level. Now, I can still take a full drain the swamp policy at the federal level, because at least then we could have the Republican states cleaning their own homes. But it's very soft as a promise, you know, and in all of this speech, he cannot say anti-white. That's a problem. That's a problem. Here he says something, again, very enticing, but I think I've heard this before.
I'm going to end the so-called Department of Education. We might have one desk, one person, just to make sure everyone's speaking English. Let's got to have a little bit of regulation, you know. Let's try and keep it so that you can only, like, that we're going to focus on some English. But after that, you can go ahead and do what you're going to do. I'm going to end.
So it all sounds very good, but I think he promised already to destroy the Department of Education. Will he do it this time? Can we truly reduce the Department of Education to one desk and one guy? I would do it. I would literally do it. I would say, all right, you're going home. They're employees. It's your last day of work. Bye-bye. Can Trump do this? Because already, as he's thinking of it, he's thinking, oh, yeah, well, we're going to make sure that people learn English. So it's like, well, that is what I've been through as a Quebecois. The whole delusion that linguistics will save you. The Quebecois people have replaced themselves genetically by importing migrants, but by putting their little condition, oh, you must be a francophone. And so what happens when you do this? You end up having a bunch of African nations that have been conquered by France. They learned French. They immigrate to Quebec. You end up having a bunch of Arabs from North Africa, from nations that were colonized. And these Arab migrants come to Quebec. So if you want to be so English censored, the problem is you're going to find yourself with a demographic shift, the same that is the same at the heart of the problem of current America, that is the same that leads to corruption in our system of justice, in our vote, in the mechanism of voting, and in the fact that the Native American voter, the Native European white voter, is getting flooded by a flow of voters who want more social welfare, more Democrat policies. And you're going to find yourself with, oh, well, at least we ensured that they were speaking English. Well, yeah, you're going to teach English to a bunch of Mexicans. The bird flu says speaking French is a slap in their face, though. Gendered language for the win. The miscellaneous brown won't take the time to learn Français. They will. They will, believe me. You can go in Montreal right now. You're going to see a bunch of Arab Muslims, black Africans, all speaking French like a Québécois, and even taking the Québécois accent. It doesn't help. We need to have a conception of ourselves and how we want the country to look going forward. And most importantly, what are the political consequences of integrating people in your nation that have fundamentally different interests, different lifestyles, and that cannot sustain the state of society as it currently holds? ESES says there was a JF thread on poll today. Oh, what are they saying on poll? They used to be very positive about me. Do they now dislike me? You know, Paul is... Sometimes, Paul, I have the impression that it's been taken over by some weird leftist who take pleasure in being kind of fascist on the side, kind of racist on the side. I don't feel that the people at poll anymore are just pure right-wing. I think poll has become so desirable a place to be to influence the minds that leftists and bread to bears have taken over these communities. I'm looking over right now the poll catalog. How would I find my name in this? I mean, poll is so disorganized. Do I look for my last name, Gary AP? Did they put the accent? I don't know how to find myself in a poll thread. You're going to have to share the link on Odyssey because it's very hard for me to browse through this. ESES says it was a Mama JF post that said, "Have you forgotten me?" Okay, so they made a joke of a fake Mama JF post. Yes, that's what I expected. I expected something like this, totally in line with the usual poll trolling. I suspect that if Mama JF was to show in society again, it wouldn't be at first through an anonymous 4chan post. You know, she might give us news through emails or something, but or phone numbers, but for her to go immediately to 4chan/poll, that would be very weird. So I would say it's probably a troll. Trump vows to shut down Biden's migrant-induced crime wave with the largest deportation operation in human history.
Police are being mobbed, brutalized, and horrifically beaten by...
Oh yeah, this is old. We had listened to this one. So same promise as before, I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration and we will begin the largest domestic deportation operation in American history. Well, it's all good, and I do hope that Trump wins because Trump, no matter how half-assed he is in his measures, it's better than Biden. But I don't have much hope in American politics anymore. Fight or flight, fearful Trump critics weigh the risk of retribution if he's reelected. Some are considering leaving the country if Trump returns to the White House. or saving money to end all the expected legal cost. I want to dream that there is a Trump retribution coming, but he is so soft. He is so soft, I wonder if he can even go after the justice system that's trying to put him down right now. And I wonder if we even have the mechanisms. Like, a lot of these cases are state justice cases. What could the federal government do? It could give them trouble by reviewing their stuff, finding some bias and claiming, oh, well, you violated the 14th Amendment, you were biased against Trump, or you were biased against this group of citizens. I mean, you could do this, but it's going to be all money thrown at lawyers trying to make cases, and it's going to be very hard for the federal government to do anything about this because it mostly comes from rogue leftist states. We have a problem here. Modern America has a problem that the liberty of states, which is an asset, which is at the root of the foundation of America, and which is also very important for right-wingers, because it's the way a piece of America can survive as right-wing. But we have the problem that it is being turned against us. The state liberty is being turned against us when California decides, or New York decides, we're going to let our illegal migrants vote. We're going to allow fraud to go on in certain counties that will lead to unrealistic voting proportions. And then you have no recourse because the states are free. The states are independent. Suddenly you have leftists claiming state sovereignty. Can you believe it? You have leftists relying on this pillar of America that, hey, the states are sovereign. They're not sovereign when Texas wants out. They're not sovereign when the South wants out. But they're sovereign when it's time to apply liberal doctrine onto a process that will eventually influence the whole of the nation. Because what you have here is local judges, local attorney generals, taking on a case of national proportion in trying to interfere with the federal election by suing Trump. That's a big problem. John Drake says the states will start ignoring federal rulings, even by the Supremes. Yeah, that is another thing that's coming. We've seen it as a kind of first attempt with Texas, where the court says remove the barbed wire. Texas says, well, okay, but we're going to put some other barbed wire and we're going to put some more army personnel there. It is a very dysfunctional country. And I think that I may have been looked at a little crazy when I was talking about balkanization of the U.S. 8 years ago. But don't you see it? Don't you see it that it's not like becoming more realistic tomorrow or even next year? But don't you see that within 50 years, if you have Texas saying, hey, at this point, we're the boundary that allows America to survive because we're basically hiring our own personnel to stop migrant waves to come into America. There is a point at which the logic goes toward balkanization, where Texas gets tired of basically funding the entire country's immigration policy. It's like, okay, now New York is benefiting from the work of the Texas Army because the Texas Army is keeping the migrants out of the U.S. And a lot of this has been illustrated in the dumping of migrants into northern states. You know, when Florida Texas takes migrants by bus, brings them to New York or brings them to Martha's Vineyard or whatever, they are kind of trying to make them realize this is what happens if we don't block the migrants. This is what happens if you don't have us. And on the other hand, you have the federal government trying to make that work of Texas impossible. It's very weird what's happening. ESES says, I doubt anyone is willing to fight a civil war when there is no set of values to fight for. Well, as long as you have different interests by different sovereignties, the set of ideas to fight for eventually come into existence, you know? You can totally have a view of the American Civil War as already set up without the question of slavery, see? You can see the distinction between the North and the South. And you can see that this geopolitical distinction was at the heart of a pre-existing conflict, even if you forget about the slavery question for a moment. Now, suddenly the slavery question can be added to the mix, and it can provide a narrative for the North to say, all right, these people are doing something we disagree with, and we have to intervene. But really, the economic distinction between the two parts of America then was existing independent of slavery. And even if you had removed slavery, you could have had a civil war still on other ideologies. Dead Star says, if you're curious about Texas demographics, there are 1,000 vids of Austin's 6th Street gang banging. Oh yeah, Texas is falling, which is why I think that Texas is a right-wing state for now. I don't know exactly how they keep this equilibrium. It's probably by giving less democratic power to the cities. But eventually, Texas is just as democrat as the rest. Texas will be the first to fall. So definitely, it's not a destination to live intergenerationally for white people. I've been saying this for years. Do not move to Texas. Saturn Shine says, Texas is a suburb of Mexico now. It's gone blue. Absolutely. To me, the only direction is north. These states will all fall. Fertility rate slumps to record low. In slow burn economic crisis, growth and living standards are at risk as the UK heads toward a baby bust. Well, this is what happens when you parasitize over your white population and you spam them with propaganda to reduce their birth. British women having fewer children than at any point since at least 1939 in a slow burn economic crisis. The population is getting squeezed. They're not secured in long-term housings that they can have confidence they can own intergenerationally. They don't have houses anymore. They have apartments, blocks, little blocks of the world that they rent. And on top of it, the entire next generation of kids is growing up into adulthood, having been spammed by LGBT propaganda, anti-natalist propaganda, and climate change propaganda. And on top of it, you're telling them that they were never really, white people were never at the source of the UK. In fact, here's a photo of a black person from 3,000 years ago. This was how UK people looked like. And they show you a black person. You have detached people from their history, from their duty to reproduce, to maintain that history, and you've neutralized their capacity to maintain their history and to maintain continuity. And you've brought in competition in the form of an infinite flow of migrants that will reproduce in their place. So you get what you fucking deserve. You deserve this low birth rate. And some countries will fall. It's as simple as this. It's a demographic race. Eva Vlaarden-Gerbroek, who is still to me an icon of female beauty, although I now see her as not the most beautiful person in the world. I now see her as the second most beautiful person in the world after my girlfriend. As Silent is pointing out, here's one great quest for Canadian free speech to be pursued by Jordan Peterson. The question is, can he do it? Because there is a Bill 367, an act to amend the criminal code, promotion of hatred or anti-Semitism. They want to eliminate as a defense against willful promotion of hatred or anti-Semitism the fact that a person in good faith expressed or attempted to establish by an argument an opinion on a religious subject or an opinion based on a belief in a religious text. So the Canadian hate speech law has always had a couple of exceptions to it. It's a case of legal argument whether these exceptions would be taken by a judge, because there are times where the judges have decided to ignore the exceptions. But the original law did contain exceptions that said it's not hate speech if you are saying it to discuss the changes to public policy. So see, when I say, you will often hear me say, here's a difference between this race and this race, and it informs us about what we should do with our immigration policy. That is often to fit my discourse within the Canadian requirements, which is that if you discuss a fact that is racist, but you do so for the purpose of influencing public policy, then it's not hate speech. There was another exception, and this bill seeks to abolish it. In Canada, it is not hate speech if you quote a religious text by, like the Bible. And so, for example, there are passages in the Bible about the Jews. If you were to quote them, you wouldn't be saying hate speech. And if you were to discuss these texts in light of trying to develop an opinion on a proper religious belief, you will not be committing hate speech. Now, I would say that 99% of the pastors or priests of Canada, they don't want any trouble. And they're not using this exception of the law to discuss anti-Semitism. They don't want to touch anything problematic. They are very cucked, the Christians of Canada. So I would say this exception of the law has not been used very much. But it is there. It is there, and it's good that it's there, because it leaves an out for people like me to be able to discuss, oh yeah, what would be the Christian position on this? And what is the position of the Talmud, as DK Shadow mentions, about the guys? So it's all very important to have a healthy public conversation that these two exceptions exist. But if this bill passes, then one of the exceptions will be taken out. And as I was pointing out, isn't Jordan Peterson the great leader of Canadian free speech? Wasn't he the one defending against compelled speech in the case of trans people? So I hope that we can get him on board to fight for the right to express anti-Semitic opinions as long as they are within the discussion of a religious text in Canada. They're totally trying to trap Trump. You know, the big $454 million. They're saying the countdown starts for him to put up the money for Happy. So the reason they went with such a big amount is that when you do an appeal, you have to give a proportion, if not all, of the amount in advance. So that if you fail at your appeal, they will immediately take all of your money. And this is where I say money doesn't exist. Money is a delusion. Money is spending power that has been temporarily attributed to you on condition that you side with the regime. And here they're saying, if you want your appellate right, if you want to appeal this ridiculous verdict, you have to deposit $454 million so that if you ever lose your appeal, we can take it from you immediately. And if we can't take it from you, or if you don't deposit it, then we're going to take your Trump Tower. So being in New York, operating a business is impossible. You're going to eventually get targeted and you're going to get drained by the system. They will just decide that your properties are not yours anymore. There's nothing that Trump can do to escape this. Either he has the $454 million in cash, which I wouldn't give it to a New York judge. If you have $454 million, Trump, buy Bitcoin. Don't give it to a New York judge. Fuck your tower. If I was Trump, I would go full ETH ninja of the internet. Full communism, says Lendold Guntram. This is the state just taking over private businesses, and they're doing so because of a ideological disagreement. Trump should just go full ETH, start developing wallets, spread across wallet, multi-sig, follow the JF guide for surviving with bitcoins. I don't know what will be the result. He has 30 days, so I guess we'll know in 30 days what he decides to do. I think he's going to probably apply for a reduction of the amount that he needs to deposit. He's going to try to bring it down to maybe 10 million. And then he's going to deposit the 10 million. But how long will it take before the appellate courts decide that he can indeed do this, or will they? Will he get to the Supreme Court saying it's an irregular amount, it's an over punishment or something like this? There's a legal term about disproportionate punishment or whatever. And he's probably going to win if he can bring it to the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court has been soft, very soft at helping Trump, and very disloyal in my view, especially how they process the election fraud case brought by Texas. Last news item, well, it's not a news item, it's a remembrance of Mel Gibson's Apocalypto. That is a good movie. That is truly a good movie. Where Mel Gibson totally embeds you into the Mayan world and the cruelty of it. And Afios was saying, I don't think there's a better depiction of first contact in any movie. Apocalypto does such a great job immersing you in the Mayan world that you are just as stunned as the natives when you see those strange armored men and their Leviathan ships, the conquistadors have come. The meeting, ladies and gentlemen, of the Mayan world with the European ships, that was a spectacular movie. And this is the very end of the movie. Like, the whole movie is, you've been in the jungle, these guys have survived, they've been pursued to be killed by the tribe, it didn't work, and now they face the ocean. What the fuck? Civilization, bro. What? Look at the cross. We are coming to train you to be civilized. example, people say don't spoil it. I mean, it's basically a point of detail that the movie ends on this. This scene has nothing to do with the rest of the movie. The rest of the movie is about something else. But yeah, Mel Gibson's Apocalypto is, in my view, one of the 10 best movies ever. In fact, perhaps I should watch it again tonight because it's a great embedding into a different world. Bronze Age Jacob was saying, this movie is a masterclass in how to make propaganda. The plot is just a reskin of Predator, in no way explicitly political, and the film works irrespective of any political messaging. It's a fun movie first and foremost, but it leaves a tiny seed in your brain. Maybe the conquistadors weren't so bad. Oh, that's an interesting perspective to see it through, because we see the absolute cruelty of the sacrificing Mayan population. And yeah, I had never seen it through that lens, but I think that what Bronze Age Jacob is saying here might be a good read. That basically nature is more savage than anything that white people has ever done to you. And wow, that is very interesting, because you can even take this lesson to black people. Like, you know, you want to complain against slavery, you know that the alternative to slavery was to live in Africa. I don't think you would have the ideal world that you wish you had there. You're going to find yourself fighting bigger monsters if you had chosen the path of not going with slavery. New guy says, you can't make it rain without sacrifice, JF. Yeah, okay, so this whole sacrifice at the top of the pyramid was to induce the rain or something. And you see the city in Apocalypto. I love how Mel Gibson has shown a type of depravity that was totally isolated from the European world in a way. Like, they have their big cities, and their big cities are as degenerate as our big cities. You know, when the prisoners get carried into the pyramid, you see the poor people on the streets, you see the homeless, you see the sick. And you're like, oh, so this is what it converges to every time. This is what it happens. And it will happen whether you're in New York right now or whether you're in South America 1,000 years ago. This is how it happens. This is the natural state of the world. Things go to crap. And high population density areas inevitably lead to human suffering and poor lifestyle. I'm going to watch this right now. Much love, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow.